Do I have Wes on the line?
Yeah, hi, how you doing? This is Wes from Los Angeles.
Hey, Wes, how you doing? Wes is with the New TLA, and he's also on the endorsement committee, which is what we're going to talk about today. How's everything, man?
Oh, very well, very well. Just out running a few errands, calling in for a few minutes to do some chatting.
Cool. So is there anything on the top of your mind right now, or you want me to try to lead the questions?
Well, in terms of talking about the endorsements, I'm just trying to get some thoughts and ideas of how to really convert from just a simple endorsement to actually getting people on the ground and motivating more people to vote within the union in this election. Whether or not they vote the way the endorsements are from New TLA, I think we just need to get more people voting.
Well, let's talk about what we did. I mean, for people who don't know, New TLA, first of all.
Sure, sure.
What is it?
Well, New TLA is a group of reform-minded people within the union that want to improve the representation of the actual membership in UTLA by increasing, access to the information within the union and also access to the political capital within the union. So we have about 80 people in the House of Representatives, which is the legislative body of the United Teachers of Los Angeles. And then we also have members who are not in the actual House of Reps, but contribute with their thoughts and ideas and opinions and on-the-ground activism. So right now I think that we're at a point where we really need to try to increase the on-the-ground activity and the recruitment, not just to join New TLA, but to actually motivate other people to vote in the upcoming UTLA citywide elections and get more action, again, on the ground.
Well, we've had some exciting momentum, I think, with New TLA, like kind of a positive snowball effect. And how did that happen? We have how many? We got 80 members now in the House of Representatives.
Right, right. Well, yeah. I think that it's just the political landscape is begging for this sort of group. You know, a group of teachers who want to, shift the conversation towards a productive one and away from a kind of reactionary stalemate. I think that there's so many people both inside and outside of education that want that reasonable, productive conversation to start taking place that, New TLA is even before it existed, something that I think had a following. And more than anything, New TLA has kind of put a name to that movement and tried to rally people around certain actionable ideas and decisions that we can start trying to move forward with as a group and trying to make that change really happen.
Well, you did the website, right? So that must mean that you are one of the people that's making this happen. What made you want to get involved?
I first heard of the idea of it before it had the name New TLA, from Jordan Henry, who reached out to me through a mutual friend. We didn't know one another beforehand, and asked me if I might be interested in getting involved with something like this, again, before it was called New TLA. And I was extremely interested. I've taught for 5 years now in LA Unified Schools, and I've seen a lot of things go on both within the union and outside the union that have been really not helpful for the education of our youth, of the kids in Los Angeles. Teaching in LA is what brought me out here. I grew up in Michigan. So to have somebody reach out with a potential opportunity to really try to improve the landscape of education in Los Angeles was really exciting for me. So I was really glad to become a part of it. And I think that's largely what's brought pretty much everyone to the table for New TLA that's gotten involved, is that idea of trying to improve education in Los Angeles.
Some people think, I would guess, that you shouldn't criticize the union, or they feel that it's criticizing the union when you bring up things that you think they're not doing that they should do. What do you think about people who say, you're being divisive, you shouldn't point out what the union's doing wrong in the media, which I guess we've done a little bit of, yeah.
I mean, I think their concern is a very valid one, because unfortunately, the you know, especially the national conversation about public unions has become frightening. The, you know, what's happening in Wisconsin and to a certain extent in other states as well, the idea of revoking collective bargaining rights and reducing the power of unions to provide for their members, in this case teachers, is a very frightening idea. And so when you have a group of teachers within the union that's talking about change within the union, there's a natural concern, I think, to be worried that that may have a negative context to it. But new TLA is not about taking power away from the union. It's about increasing the power of the union, increasing the representative nature of the union's governing body, bringing the union to a place where it can become more relevant than it has been in the past. And, you know, there's certainly, with any group, there's always ways to criticize the government and criticize the way things have been because people want things to be better. But, you know, I hope that I never represent New TLA to be something that is out there to criticize, because it's not. The purpose of New TLA is not to criticize the union or to look back and say how terrible things have been, but instead to look forward to what we can contribute to the union and what the union can contribute to the educational landscape in general in Los Angeles.
So I think two or three things I want to cover before while you're on the air is one is, do you think you think unions are under attack right now? Would you say that?
Yeah. I mean, it's the sort of thing politically where, you know, unions are obviously historically and currently very strongly connected to the Democratic Party, and I think there's a lot of ties there that are causing a lot of concern in the Republican versus Democrat polarized system that we seem to be especially in recently. But what, you know, whatever the motives may be for the quote-unquote attacks on the union, they're happening. And so it's a difficult balance with New TLA, but it's a very important one to emphasize the progressive importance for reform within the union and improving the conversations that we have and the way we contribute to the education of our kids here in LA, when at the same time not undermining the importance of the union itself and not undermining the existence of the union.
Okay, now this could lead to my second of three of my last questions is, what can you outline the main principles and objectives, or the ones that you find most interesting of New TLA?
Of New TLA? I mean, ideally, right now, and I wish I were in front of a computer, because I'd like to read, you know, the ones that have been kind of agreed upon via consensus in conversation, but the general principles and objectives that I personally feel are most important, and again, because I don't have the official New TLA ones in front of me, I'm just kind of speaking as my own member of New TLA individually.
Sure.
But it's just the idea of moving the conversation towards an open dialogue and getting away from the polarized politics that unfortunately happen at all levels of government, where people disagree and so nothing is done, or people disagree so they spend time, you know, fighting instead of trying to find common ground. And, you know, whatever category of educational progress that may fall under, I think that New TLA has a great opportunity to bring progressively minded people on both sides, whether it's union and district or union and non-district educational entities, to try to help facilitate conversations that otherwise might not happen. And those are conversations that might, you know, improve the professional development for teachers within the union, or might improve the educational policy at the district level, might improve the collective bargaining agreement itself, may even improve, you know, certain legislature educational policy at a state level. There's so many different ways that New TLA can help by simply increasing the rationality and the intention of conversations.
Mm-hmm. And you can find the principles and objectives at
newtla.com, and you know, you go right to the homepage and it's very clearly set out for you. You can learn a little bit more about the organization you know, what we stand for, what we're doing, how you can get involved. And like I said, the elections are coming up for citywide offices in UTLA, and UTLA is expected to be making a few endorsements. So I hope that teachers will consider those endorsements, and whether or not they choose to follow them, most importantly, I hope that teachers get out there and vote, because only 16%, I think it was 16.7%, voted in the first round of the citywide elections. So your vote counts greatly, and so go out there and exercise your rights as much as possible for all those members of UTLA out there, all the teachers.
Okay, we're talking to Wes Farrow of UTLA, and Wes is a middle school teacher in East LA, right, Wes?
That's correct. The special education coordinator, actually, at this point. Yeah,
oh, okay.
At Belvedere Middle School.
Oh, great. And so I'm going to play just a little bit of the endorsement committee's meeting. When was it? Last Monday. Not the candidates, but the questions, so people can see what we asked all of the candidates, and your questions
right.
In there too, Wes. So I'll do that now. And are you listening? Or are you going off somewhere?
Yeah, I'll listen for a few more minutes. Definitely.
Right. Well, call in if you have any anything to add, and thanks for calling in, Wes.
Yeah, thank you very much. Nick.
Okay, have a good day.
All right, you too.
Okay, so we're going to play a clip from the endorsement committee questions to candidates. We were talking to MJ, who is I forget her last name, and I forget the, but we endorsed her. I think we recommended her endorsement. But let's play it if we can.
Within our union, there are a lot of different bargaining units with very different priorities, the subs versus full-time, the veterans versus the new teachers. So going on about that, how will you help reconcile those priorities and help bring unity to our union?
That was a question from George Crowder of Charles White Elementary, of MJ, it was Robinson, and the next question will be from Wes, who we just heard from.
What three first steps might you take to combat the view of UTLA as a reactionary source of dwindling power and to ensure that UTLA is cooperating with other entities to contribute to forward progress in the educational landscape?
All right. I can play these again. They go by quickly. But the next question is from Kelsey, from Santee.
What are your specific plans to make our union more transparent in terms of decision-making and negotiations, and how will you help to make the district more transparent to our union members?
Okay, and the second to last question is from James Encinas.
What do you see as an effective teacher evaluation model, and what plans along the lines of evaluation do you have with respect to raising the quality of education in our schools? And finally, what do you suggest we do to teachers who are not doing their job well and are in fact giving us all a bad name?
And the last question is from Michael Stryker.
Do you support development of a UTLA-led, fully unionized charter complex comprised of, say, 10 or 20 schools currently in LAUSD? Why or why not?
Okay, now just to give you an idea of who was there, who was on the endorsement committee, I'm just gonna play the bit where people, MJ asked us to say our names, and so this is everybody at the meeting. Well. Maybe I won't play that. Maybe that's an invasion of privacy. Let's try calling Jordan Henry, because he is said to call in. He's at his kid's soccer game. Let's see if he's available.
Hi, this is Jordan. Thanks for calling. Leave a message, and I'll get back to you.
Wow. Okay, well... All right, well, so instead of doing that, we can try listening to The Daily Show that I really liked from March 3rd, where Jon Stewart shows the attack on teachers. So let's listen to this. And he has some great things to point out about the hypocrisy of attacking teachers while defending big CEOs.
From Comedy Central's World News headquarters in New York, this is The Daily Show with Jon Stewart.
You could find this yourself, but I'm making it easy for you.
We got a show for you tonight, people. Our guest tonight, Diane Ravitch, will be here, author of a book on the American educational system, which, as you know, is second to many. We begin tonight in Wisconsin with our ongoing coverage of crisis in the Dairyland. You're up. In his battle to balance Wisconsin's budget, Governor Scott Walker has finally put his proposals on the table. He is, in addition to stripping teachers and public workers of most of their collective bargaining rights, cutting $800 million from the Wisconsin public schools budget over the next 2 years, as well as restricting local municipalities the ability to raise property taxes to make up for any shortfalls. In essence, he has put public sector unions on notice, and particularly teachers, that the gravy train is over. Even if the gravy is actually lunchroom cafeteria grade gravy-like rehydrated slurry chips.
We can no longer live in a society where the public employees are the haves and the taxpayers who foot the bills are the have-nots.
In these tough economic times,
sure,
we've all got to be in it together.
We all are in it. Together, all of us have to sacrifice. Teachers, teachers' assistants, student teachers, retired teachers, school janitors. Everybody has to sacrifice. Why teachers? Well, as Republicans and their kin in the media know, you got to follow the money.
The average teacher salary is much greater than the average private
Absolutely.
Sector salary.
Salary, $51,000 in Wisconsin. Benefits, $38,000 per year. That comes to a whopping $89,000.
More than their private sector counterparts.
We're talking a $90,000, 9 months worth of work, all in package. Boy, it sounds pretty darn good to the 14 million people out of work.
Well, you know what? That does sound great to someone without a job. And did you know, you're not even going to believe this, some of these fat cat public school kids are getting a hot breakfast free every morning. I bet starving people would like a piece of that action, don't you think? But point taken. These folks just want teachers to give back because they believe that $50,000 a year in salary plus medical and dental benefits are incredibly generous, bordering on avarice. And I imagine these same people will feel the same way about couples earning more than $250,000 a year being asked to allow the Bush tax cuts to expire so that they would have to pay a slightly higher federal income tax rate.
Is the 200...
Yeah.
Well, we got Jordan on the line, and we can get back to the Daily Show. Hey, Jordan, how you doing?
I'm good, Nick. How you doing?
I'm real good. We're doing a second teacher talk, and it seems to be going relatively well.
Cool.
We had Wes call in.
All right.
And we are going to have a blogger call in, Leonard Eisenberg. Have you heard of his blog? And now we have you.
Beautiful.
Are you at a soccer game right now?
I'm at my daughter's soccer practice. Yeah, she's out kicking the ball around.
It's not even an official game, and you're there. That's dedication.
Yep. And then her son, or my son, is up after this. So getting a little fresh air.
Sounds good.
Watching the kids kick the ball around.
What part of L.A.?
Echo Park. Bellevue Park.
Very nice.
Yeah.
So we talked about a few things. We talked about, how new TLA started.
Okay.
If you want to talk about that, that might be a good way to ease into
sure.
it.
Sure. Yeah. Sure. So you were there, Nick, actually. You know, I guess in my head, 2 years ago, at my school, about one-third of the teachers got RIFs. This, I guess, was 2009. And it was interesting. I found the union reaction, the official union reaction at the time 2 years ago was very odd and weird. There were hunger strikes. There were sleep outs, sleep ins, sleepovers.
I did one of those.
You did one of those. Well, yeah. Did it save many jobs?
I don't know, but we had some more. It was pretty cool, actually. We slept in front of Santee.
Nice. Well,
campfire.
I remember that.
Guitar.
But to me, I don't know. It was kind of an odd reaction. I kind of felt from. I mean, and I'm glad you were out there doing it, but I didn't. I don't know. It wasn't really up to the task of this major, the economic crash and everything that's happened since then.
Uh-huh.
So around then, at that time, I was like, we need to get some of these, we need to get RIF teachers involved in their union. I mean, they're the ones at the bottom of the, of the flagpole. They're the ones who have always got the most to lose. And that was kind of, I guess, the spark of getting new people normally not involved in the union, to get involved in the union. And it was in August where you and I and three others sat down and had a Starbucks and we were like, all right, let's do this. Let's elect some people. Here's the House of Reps. There's 350 seats. It's spread across these regions. Who do we know? And we basically just started with pencil and paper and it went from 5 to 13 to 18 to 27 to 36. And not around principals. I mean, we weren't actually successful at all in getting RIFT teachers to join New TLA. That's definitely not who we are. We're actually pretty, now that it's all done and behind us, at least the election part, we're a pretty veteran group of teachers. So, but nevertheless, that was kind of, I guess the big picture of New TLA is recognizing what a terribly difficult time this is to be a teacher and to be a union member. I guess a bunch of people galvanized around the fact that our union, which we're all, proud members, dues-paying members, if they're not handling this the way we think they should, if they're not kind of representing teachers and teachers' interests the way that we think they should, then we got to do something about it. We can't, we can't just sit by and critique. We got to get involved and try to influence people to do things the way we would like.
Well, I remember.
Yeah, so that's kind of, I guess, the genesis of it. And I think we're pretty much locked now. The elections are basically done. So we got about 80 members, a few more, locked into the House of Reps, which is, the governing body. So we got about a quarter of the House of Reps. And then meanwhile, we're growing just rank and file members. We're growing daily. People are coming to www.newtla.com and, entering their information and kind of joining the list of just plain old teachers who think we're onto something and want to pipe in their voices.
So, yeah, it involves, part of the mechanism for why this is working, it seems, is that it involves this body within the union that I didn't even know about before, which is the House of Representatives.
Right.
And that there's not a lot of participation in it. And yet it's like the main body, the decision-making body of the union.
Yep.
And you'd been going to these union meetings, and I guess you found, and Michael Stryker is definitely a big activist about this, that they are sort of doing a lot of stuff that's not really relevant, right?
Yeah. I mean, I guess relevance depends, you know. People, you know, a lot of union members say, hey, if it's relevant to one union, it's relevant to all unions, and they have a wider scope. But I think it's true to say that our group, New TLA, is, I mean, we look at what's right in front of us, which is the educational landscape in LA. And we would, given how difficult this time is, we would love to keep our focus just on that. And there's other people in the House of Reps who think, oh, you know, that's just part of our focus.
Speaking of the educational landscape, it seems like the public thinks that the union is getting in the way of education.
Right.
And is there, I mean, I think that some people in UTLA feel like we can defeat that objection to unions by making it no longer true.
Right.
And, you know, in what ways can we support education?
Right.
As opposed to just supporting, you know, the interests of unions members.
Right.
So how can we support education? How can we improve the educational landscape as a union?
Right. Well, I think if you just look in the last, 3 years, we only have to go back 3 years. I think it was October of 2008 when the markets crashed. So what? That's even less than 3 years. We're talking about 30 months. So much has changed since then. There's been, you know, race to the top. There's been, there's all these new models for what to do with so-called failing schools, shutdown, conversion. There's been, there's national standards coming into play. There's a national standardized test is coming into play. There's focus on teacher evaluations everywhere, student data everywhere, and all this has just happened in the last 3 years. And now they're talking about pension reform, all these issues. And I guess one thing we can do, New TLA, or I don't even want to put it there, but UTLA could and should do, is kind of have thoughtful responses or thoughtful statements and positions on these. On all these issues, and I don't think our UTLA has consistently done that on these issues. I mean, the criticism is that they're, you know, that we are the group that says no, 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 no. And I think that's unfortunately true.
UTLA says yes.
Well, that's tricky. I think New TLA is not scared of these conversations. New TLA is actually intrigued by these conversations and is willing to listen to both sides and isn't beholden necessarily to you know, the ink of a contract that's 40 years old. And this is just an example. And, you know, it's a kind of a generational example, but way back, you know, our union is about 41 years old. And way back when it began, it promised lifetime health benefits to workers, which was huge and is huge, and it's a wonderful thing. And we still have it, provided you teach a certain amount of years, et cetera, et cetera. You get lifetime health benefits upon retiring. It's a fantastic perk. However, having said that, society has really changed in the 40 years since that was inked in terms of people entering teaching today are not likely to work for one employer for 35 years, much less one, you know, one school district or one field. I think the average person now works in six different fields, you know, over a course of their lifetime. So really, the lure of lifetime benefits is not what's getting people to teach nowadays. It's just been a change. surely, over the last 40 years, you know, the lifespan has gone up something like 20 years. People are living into their 80s now. When I was a kid, I remember it was in the 70s. I think 72 was the average or something like that. And, of course, health care costs have skyrocketed, you know. Over the last decade, it's been atrocious. So what I'm saying is that to not acknowledge that, to not talk about those things and just say no, and anyone who brings up these points is the boogeyman, I think isn't kind of looking at the facts square in the face in terms of cost. So that's just one example.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think we can financially keep on operating the same way we have for 40 years. And I think that's maybe something new and a new perspective that new TLA members bring to the table.
Well, let's talk about what just happened last Monday, the endorsement committee meeting with candidates for the UTLA. I think it was impressive and amazing how they were able to get almost all the candidates to come and meet with our new TLA endorsement committee.
Yeah.
So how did you set that in motion?
So, interestingly, when was it? I think it early February. We had some meetings, a steering committee meeting of new TLA, and the group decided not to make endorsements in the election. That instead, we were just going to kind of gather questions from teachers, forward those questions onto candidates, and then provide the teachers the responses to their questions. So the original position of new TLA was, no, we weren't going to get involved in the, we weren't going to make endorsements. Then after, I guess it was after the last House meeting, a lot of people went to their very first House meeting in late February. You know, half of new TLA had been to one in January, but the other half went to their first in February, and it was a pretty ugly. It was a disappointing meeting to people there for the first time, and I think that caused a lot of people to reconsider their first assumption that we should just stay neutral in these elections. And I think a lot of people were like, you know what, you know, that's absolutely weigh in. And so based on that, the committee kind of talked amongst themselves, reversed their decision, and pulled together the endorsement process. And right now we're waiting on the ratification. They came up with their recommendations, and by tomorrow at midnight, all the new TLA members should have weighed in with whether or not they agree with the recommendations. And then, sure enough, I guess the results will become official. The endorsements will become official, and we'll see how that, or if that affects the final round of union elections, which I believe is March 29, I think, is the final date.
Okay. So the vote is, when's the vote, and how do I vote?
Well, the committee made recommendations. They heard from six races going on. In two of the races, they didn't make a recommendation. In four of the races, they did. And so every new TLA member now is going to vote electronically on whether or not they agree with the committee's endorsements.
But I mean, when's the actual vote?
Pardon me?
When does every teacher get to vote for their UTLA candidates?
Oh, for the UTLA candidates?
Yeah.
The ballots go out in the mail tomorrow, beginning tomorrow.
Okay, and we can find the new TLA endorsements at newtla.com?
Yep, I think they'll be posted probably on Tuesday, no later than Wednesday probably.
Okay, this is Jordan Henry. Are you the founder of new TLA?
Yeah, I guess I'm one of the organizers of it.
Okay, and you've been in the media a lot, right? You've been on, what's some of the media that you've spoken to?
Let's see, well, we, new TLA, we've been in the Daily News, the LA Times, we're on Air Talk, Teacher Talk.
Yeah.
Those, I think, are some of the biggies that
You ran for president of the union.
I was an early candidate, yeah. I, early on, I was a candidate. And you know what? Interesting thing happened. You know, all along I had hoped and planned, you know, we had a 3-week vacation in January. Traditional calendars had 3 weeks of vacation. And I've kind of done my research, and over the last couple of years, last couple of elections, the deadline for nominations is always like after Martin Luther King Day, you know, January 17, something like that, after vacation. So my plan had always been, hey, during those 3 weeks of vacation, I'm going to try to rally together some candidates, join me. So I'm not doing it alone, running for president alone, but find a whole bunch of people to do it with me. And wouldn't you know it, the board of directors, one of the, you know, governing bodies of the union, changed the nomination deadline this year for the first time. I don't think it's ever been before Christmas. But they basically said instead of making it January, middle of January, they made it early December. And that kind of shot down my my plan of, you know, having a team around me. So instead, what you saw, and, you know, what you were part of instead, was that was exactly when we launched New TLA. Since we didn't have enough candidates to form a slate and to be still playing the electoral game right now, we said, all right, well, let's take whoever we do have and start a political caucus. So that kind of has coincided with, you know, it's kind of like the plan B. But who knows, 3 years from now, maybe New TLA will be, you know, well represented in the citywide elections.
And then you could run again.
Maybe.
So, all right. Now, how's the game?
They're running laps. My daughter is kicking with her right foot, and she's getting some good distance on the ball. She's doing all right.
How's Santi?
Pardon me?
How's school? Santi, how's the school?
Oh, that school. I thought you said how's the game.
I did. I thought we were over with the game. I'm sorry. Was there?
The, you know, school is tough. I don't know how you're feeling it at your school.
Oh, I'm feeling it. I am feeling
it. Yeah, it is tough. I mean, more kids than ever before because of class size. Less administrator support than ever before because of their own downsizing. Less support at every level of the school because of all the cutbacks from, you know, cafeteria to clerks to, you know, office. And so I've always found teaching to be extremely hard, you know, and now it's harder than ever. And I don't know if it's my imagination or not, but I think some of these students I have gone through a couple years of rifts and turnover. And so I don't know. They got some complex personalities too. I'm having a real hard time. This has actually been my hardest year teaching since our school opened.
Really?
So it's tough.
Yeah. So yeah. Well, that's something that we should be talking about on Teacher Talk is just the conditions. You know, I heard in Detroit there's 60 kids in a classroom.
Was it Detroit? Could you believe that? Yep, that's how they solved their budget there. Unbelievable. I mean, they closed so many schools and combined. I mean, isn't that just crazy? 60 kids.
You almost might as well not have a school as have 60 kids in a classroom.
It's unbelievable. I mean, and I don't think people get that. If that could happen in Detroit, I mean, they fund education at a higher level in Michigan than they do here. I mean, it's not crazy to think that's not going to happen in LA Unified because we've already got kids at what the norm is 42. We're already in the low 40s. I mean, the catch out here is like in this budget, a lot of school districts around the country are shutting schools. You know, it's a cost cutting measure. I mean, I guess it makes sense. We don't even have that option available to us because we're building schools. We're actively building schools. So it's, which kind of explains public school choice motion is why so many of them are just being given away or made accessible to charter schools is quite frankly, the district can't even afford them. So, yeah, 60 kids in a class. I can't believe that. And know what? We're going to go. I mean, if it's now 42, after some of these rifts go into effect, it could be up to 45, 46.
Hold up. I'm sorry. You have that many in your classes now?
Well, that's what we're allowed. You can have in high school English, I think it's 42 kids. And then the electives, I mean, I don't have the chart in front of me, but yeah, it's totally allowed.
Okay. You know, I feel it's almost like a conflict of interest here because I feel like even if I wasn't working as a teacher, I would have very strong opinions about this. But I feel like since I am working as a teacher, it's like it comes off as self-interest.
Well, I hear you. I hear you. I mean, that's the thing, though. That's what we got to be cognizant of is like, so pretend you're not a teacher and you're a parent and you're sending your kid, you know, to school. And there's one school that has 44 kids in a class and another school has 28 kids in a class. So which school are you going to send your kid to? You know, and this is part of comes back to your first question about talking about difficult subjects.
And so how are we going to have a functioning democracy when part of democracy depends on people being able to be informed and about what's going on?
Right.
You cannot have a democracy if people are not informed about their choices. You can't have a functioning democracy.
Well, true, but I don't know. It's tricky. I mean, you've seen democracy. You've seen the democracy of UTLA close up.
You could say the same thing. Are people in UTLA, are they really informed about the things that they're voting on always?
Well, I think you could ask the same question about any democracy. I mean, this is such a dismal time for politics across the country, you know? I mean, I don't know about you. Like, I used to be, you know, I don't know. I find the political climate everywhere is just so disturbing. Like, I mean, it's just crazy. It's the way the factions organized, you know, whether it's a Tea Party on one side or it is troubling. And really, UTLA is, I think, just kind of mirrors that, you know. It's not its own little evil, but I don't know. I mean, Sacramento hasn't really been a functional body for years. It's terrible. These are tough times. These are tough times in the state that funds education as little as any other state, in a city with a really high ELL population, just making it, you know, all the more difficult.
ELL, for those of you who are not teachers, is English language learners.
Right. And, you know, and it's a high poverty city, and the adult literacy is the lowest in the country. And so these are all, and this is all before we talk about what just the difficult job teaching is under the easiest circumstances. I mean, it's never an easy gig. So this is tough, and we knew it was going to be tough once the market crashed. And until the market recovers, it's going to stay this way. And we may do. I won't be surprised if maybe it's not next year, but that 40 is going to get closer to 50, and I mean, it's ugly, my friend. And you know what? It's just coming down the pipe right now. March 15 is when the rifts go out. There's going to be over 5,000 of them. And that's when the nonsense always begins, you know? The rallies, and I don't mean nonsense in terms of the rallies, but just like the headache for everyone. It's so hard to keep your mind on the mission in front of you.
So, yeah, in March, how many people are going to be... Rift means reduction in force.
Right.
And they're going to get these pink slips. And it doesn't mean that they're necessarily going to be fired. It means that they are fired, but they're good. They may be rehired. But
right.
So how many will we get? How many?
Over 5,000. I think it's 5,046. I mean, that could change, but the last report to the board stated that over 5,000 teachers, I think it's maybe 5,051, would get RIFs, which just means the district has given you notice that they may fire you at the end of the school year. Doesn't mean, you know, and that may is contingent upon all the negotiations that then take place between March 15 and June 22. So, yeah, 5,000 this year. Last year, I think it was 2,200. The year before that, it was 5,600. So we're talking about, what, that's 14,000 teachers have gotten RIF in the last 3 years, and we're not out of this yet. You know, there's still, next year's budget isn't going to be that pretty, or the, you know, 2 years' budget is not going to be that pretty easy either.
Well, the next budget's not going to be pretty either, right? Well, I don't know. I'm feeling a little depressed.
It is, yeah.
Yeah.
And you know, it'll be interesting, Nick, to see new TLA. Even how many of us are going to get RIFs? Have you ever received one?
Yeah. I did. I know I got displaced. I got something. I think it was a RIF. Yeah. But I was hired back though.
Yep.
But I know that Amber Young, who worked with us at Santee, was RIFed, and she was taken away from Santee and she ended up somewhere completely different where she didn't have any connection to the school.
Yeah.
And that was, to me, one, you know, personal connection I had with the whole issue.
Right.
Of us losing teachers just based on how, you know, the fact that if you're new, you're gone, even if you're doing great stuff.
Right. Yep. Yeah.
Well, I'm thinking we're going to go to this blogger, Leonard Eisenberg, and unless there's anything you want to talk about.
Nope. I like your show, Nick.
Thanks.
Thanks for letting me on. And
of course.
I'm going to go back to watching my daughter's practice here.
All right. Sounds good. We'll talk to you soon.
Bye-bye.
Later. Bye.
Okay. I'm going to dial up Leonard Eisenberg right now. Maybe we can listen to a little of the Diane Ravitch interview on the Daily Show.
Please welcome back to the program, Diane Ravitch. Thank you for joining us.
Wonderful to be here.
The death and life of the great American school system, how testing and choice are undermining education. Now, you have to forgive me, but I believe if I'm correct, and I think I am, the conventional wisdom is testing and choice are saving the great American school system. So I think the premise of your book is probably wrong. I think you probably want to take all that back. You go ahead.
Well, let me ask your studio audience, how much do you like testing? Well, that's half the argument right there.
Yeah, I'm not sure that's the way it goes. So why is, in your mind, so this is No Child Left Behind, Race to the Top, these are the things that are damaging our abilities in schools, is that?
Yeah, I mean, basically what's happened since No Child Left Behind, which has now been around for almost 10 years, is that schools have been turned into testing factories, and there's less time for the arts. We have schools cutting the arts completely, less time for science, less time for history, for physical education, for civics. I mean, all the things that make school interesting and
you
fun.
Almost said fun. No.
Fun. No, I stumbled on fun. It's true. But, you know, kids have to have a reason to want to come to school. No, I've never met any child who said, I can't wait to get to school for test prep.
Okay, Leonard Eisenberg from Per Daily. Are you there?
Hello.
How you doing?
I can hardly hear you.
Well, is it enough to make out a question?
You want to just call me right back?
I don't know if it's going to be any better, but I'll do that.
Thanks a lot. Call me right back.
Okay.
care of them well. They give them lots of support. And then the teachers make up the test, and they use the test to say which children need help.
Even critics, people that you know, this Waiting for Superman, they point to Finland as well. Everybody points to Finland.
Mm-hmm. But Finland is not privatizing its school.
Right.
It's not opening charter
schools. Very strong teachers' unions.
Very strong, 100% teachers unionized.
Mm-hmm.
So Finland is an example of, here's a country that's been incredibly successful. The poverty rate there is less than 3% for children. In this country, it's 20% and growing.
Well, that now we're on to something. This is, you know, the educational system in the country is such a complex ecosystem. And it appears that the teachers, because they are the most visible and on the front lines, are the easiest target of the ire of those that would like to express their frustration. And it's not.
Okay, so we're back with Leonard Eisenberg.
How you doing?
Good. All right. So you are taking issue with some of the things you've heard.
Yeah, I'm taking issue. I have a website called Per Daily. www.perdaily.com, and I basically blog about things that's never seem to get into the press in Los Angeles. And one of the things I think people need to be aware of is this isn't just happening in Los Angeles, it's happening all over the country. And there is a complete localization, so people think of what's happening to them, and they react. The last three presidents of UTLA, De Higuchi, John Perez, and now Duffy, all say the same thing. They say, let's see what the district has to say, and they respond. They never promulgate a platform. And I recall something that Duffy pulled where he set up 2,000 empty chairs in front of Beaudry to show the number of jobs over a year ago that were going to be lost. And what he didn't understand, and what I think most teachers understand, which is creating apathy, is that when you set up 2,000 empty chairs, the message to Ray Cortinas and his apparatchiks is that you can't get your rank and file into the streets. And you can't get your rank and file into the streets because you've been selling out people. This is not criticizing the union, as was mentioned by Jordan. Democracy is based on a dialogue. There is no dialogue in UTLA. You have no access to the UT paper. Duffy controls everything. And there are now approximately 300 teachers, of which I am one, who have been removed from the classroom for no cause, with no charge. You know, they put charges against you, but they don't substantiate it. And the union does absolutely nothing to help you. Now, one of the things that Jordan said before, and I wanted to focus on this, is that if you go back about 3-4 years, the discussion was that my generation, the baby boomers, represent, we are 4 times larger than any other generation. And the word back then was that 50% of teachers were going to retire and that there was going to be a huge, shortage of teachers. But now we're being told that teachers are being fired. There are 43 in a classroom, 60 in Detroit, and the union has no platform. In other words, it doesn't say, we teachers stand for this, we have a very specific way instead of what I call ed-speak platitudes and the monologue that is coming out of LAUSD. There is no response to it. Now, I'll give you an example because you were playing Diane Ravitch's piece with John Stewart. At the beginning of Diane Ravitch's book, one of the things she points out is that the New York City School District came into existence in 1906 to overcome the corruption of small charter-like schools. And now we are allowing these charters to come into existence. And there's nothing really wrong with a charter except that only 17% of them do better than public schools, 37% do the same, and the rest do worse. But you don't read about this in the Los Angeles Times, and our union doesn't stand up and point this out. Ravitch is not the only one. Dr. Lois Weiner, professor at City University of New Jersey, points out that no one is hiding what this is about. It's about the privatization of public education. Teachers represent the largest segment of what is spent on public education. If you privatize public education, you have a business that is worth somewhere between $250 and $370 billion a year. If a hedge fund invests in this, it can double its money in 7 years, get federal and state tax benefits, and then a la credit default swaps in subprime, they will dump these charters loaded with debt back on the state and back on the taxpayers. Now, what is my union doing? Absolutely nothing. In Germany, teachers get paid 60 to 80,000 euros a year. It is a profession. Jordan said, well, you know, people aren't coming into teaching and staying 35 years. Why not? Because they get no support for discipline, because they are attacked, because they are savaged. 50% of teachers quit within 3 to 5 years. And a lot of the teachers that stay aren't your best and your brightest simply because they can find a better way to make a living without having to put up with the nonsense. Now, I can go on, but I'll just tell you that I was in court on Monday in the Office of Administrative Hearings, and I heard the Judge Dash, tell my attorney from Trickstadt, Schwab, and Trickstadt that they are gearing up to displace 4,500 teachers from the teaching profession. I don't know what people are waiting for, but I'll tell you this. When administrators don't show up, school goes on. When teachers don't show up, school is over. And what school has become now, 40 years after the Latino walkout, is worse than ever for Latino children and functional daycare. There are only 6% whites left in LAUSD. You following what I'm saying here?
Yeah.
They built the RFK Learning Center. I gave them a proposal for a Lycée International, an international school, where kids could have been educated for 2 days a week in their native language and culture, and the other 4 days a week it would have been a regular American school. They could have used the old Ambassador Hotel building, which was a historical landmark. Rather than do that, they tore down the building. They've spent over $521 million. The place has talking benches. But as you were talking about with Jordan, we're projecting, presently it's 43 plus per class, and it could go as high as 60. They're putting the money into building, but there's no money for teachers. You've got a company called Apex that is selling a program to schools, and the Apex AP exam, it really looks nice because it looks like a school is giving AP examinations. In reality, they're charging $350 a student. They have one set of assessments. The kids who take the assessments in the first period class go ahead and give them to the other kids. So there's rampant cheating going on throughout LAUSD. You have kids that are graduating high school with third and fourth grade, second grade reading abilities. Now, if you look at the Los Angeles Times on Saturday, March 5th, there's a discussion of how the founder of Crescendo Charter Schools was fired. For what? For opening up assessments and letting the kids look at them before being given them. I don't know what the big deal is because this has been going on for years within LAUSD. I have been giving assessments to kids where I am proctoring an exam and I am not supposed to grade that exam, but in the proctoring material are all the answers and all the rationales. If you're threatening a teacher with assessments, with value-added assessments that could cost them their job if their students with third-grade reading abilities don't do well, what do you think a teacher is going to do? Lose their job or help the kids?
Right. There's so many issues that you're bringing up right now. It seems like
right.
We should have, you know, had it at the beginning of the show. But I'm like at the end of the show here. Is there one thing that you think that maybe we could think about for next time?
Yeah, one thing you can think about is this. You need to try to let Warren Fletcher in, Anna Valencia, Linda Guthrie, Juan Ramirez, David Lyle, and Scott Johnson. And the reason why is that I'm not guaranteed that Warren's going to do any better. But I know that as long as I've known Warren, you know, he's spoken truth to power.
I just want to say, look, for people who don't know, Warren is the candidate for utility president.
Right. And one of the things you need to understand, you know, you were talking about the House of Representatives. Duffy packs the House of Representatives with retired teachers. Teachers who come there for their social life and for a chicken dinner or a Chinese dinner. A lot of times you lose quorum at the House of Reps. So when I sat on the House of Reps many years ago, I asked Dave Higuchi, I said, Dave, what happens with the things passed at the House of Representatives? And he says, well, they go into a notebook on my desk. And he says, then he paused and he said, we really must do something with that. When I dealt with John Perez, I sat on a political action committee at UTLA, and I wanted to get state teachers' retirement out of tobacco stocks. John said, oh, we can't do that. That's our retirement. I went to Phil Angelides. Phil Angelides had no trouble getting us out of this. We're telling kids don't smoke cigarettes, and we have our money in retirement funds.
Right. So if I'm hearing what you're saying, we're gonna next episode we should concentrate on the leadership of UTLA.
Right. In other words, okay. I'm not criticizing a union. Fundamental, and this was pointed out by Jordan, is that criticism is fundamental to democracy. If you've got a bunch of people that are talking about reform in a union the same way staff development is presented, where it's all in general terms and nothing gets concretized and nothing gets implemented, we're going to lose. And I'll tell you that what teachers need to be thinking about at this point is that the way things are going, whoever becomes president of UTLA this time might very well be the last president of UTLA. I don't know what part they don't understand, but in the ACLU suit that ended seniority in terms of being, you know, collective bargaining rights are at stake, teachers sit back and do nothing. And they don't understand that certain things they're being targeted, and that either they unify, either they vote, either we have a platform with great specificity to contend with what the nonsense that LAUSD is putting out there. You still get Ramon Cortinas talking about how everybody's going to college in a school system where over 50% of the kids are dropping out between the 9th and the 12th grade.
So
no one confronts him.
So here I'm trying to keep it to an hour just for
right.
the sake of the podcast. So did you read the new TLA principles and objectives on the site?
Yeah, I think I did at one point.
What did you think about new TLA as a
Well, I
as
think
a
the same issue. It's got to be more specific. When John Deasy gets $330,000, which is $80,000 more than what Ramon Cortinas is getting, and nobody says anything. And it just goes by the wayside. We're all supposed to take cuts, furlough days, and everything, and he gets 80,000 more, and he's the only candidate?
Right.
And he's from the Gates Foundation.
Well, this is the founding principles. I mean, how specific could you get in
I think
those?
You can get very specific. So, for example, you start talking about what is a secondary single credential teacher supposed to do with a kid in middle school or high school that has a third grade reading ability. Single subject credential teachers have no remedial skills. They are specialists. And yet their jobs are going to be contingent on how well a kid with a third grade reading ability does in their class. Why doesn't the union bring this issue up? There are 300 teachers out of a classroom. Now, every teacher that's pulled out of a class isn't a sweetheart. But at perdaily.com, I have linked with hundreds of these teachers who did nothing. As a matter of fact, they were doing what they were supposed to do. One teacher got a fire extinguisher squirted on her. Instead of coming and helping her, they brought charges against her. Another teacher reported an assistant principal that was going into the boys' locker room, and they came after him. He's now out of teaching.
Well, I'm experiencing some trouble with, with my own school that I'm at right now. And so, but I
what kind of trouble do you have?
Well, I don't know if I want to get...
No, but I'm saying problem. Teachers
I put a girl in the hallway and closed the door because she was screaming repeatedly in class. And, you know, I got pulled in with my union representative and they asked me what my rationale was for that. And I started saying, well, you know, not everything I do is completely rational in class because I don't, you know, I was trying to say that it wasn't, I didn't mean to do it, I didn't think about it. She said, I'm writing down everything you're saying, and it, now they're trying to, you know. But
let
look,
me
point
something out quickly. Just one last point to make. You are you aware of the fact that there's an education code section that says that if the child is disruptive in your class, you have a right to bring the parents into class to accompany their child until that child comports themselves well. Now, has LAUSD or UTLA ever pushed for this? Has the collective bargaining agreement been honored? Have any of the bulletins that LAUSD has for its own internal running, have they been followed? There is an education code section, 821.6, that says, 821.6 says that an administrator can come after you maliciously without probable cause, and it's not actionable. There is also an education code section, Ed Code 44110-44114, that say if you're a whistleblower that administrators can be put in jail, can be held personally liable, that the district can be held liable if they come after you. Are these being enforced? The answer is no. None of these are being enforced, and the union, rather than aggregating the 300 teachers, keeps us all separate. Each teacher has an insurance policy of $30,000 each when they are being displaced from their job. And displacement, they're going to be going after 4,500 teachers immediately. I was displaced from a job where I had the most seniority. I had to fight them tooth and nail. They're not following the rules, and the only entity in a position to keep them fighting, you know, by the rules is UTLA. And we have a president of UTLA who's terming out this year and says that if he doesn't get elected a vice president of NEA, that he's going to go to work for the district. This is somebody we're giving $57 a month to? Mm-hmm. I mean, when do we stop talking about platitudes and start talking about the reality that there are only 6% whites in public education in Los Angeles? They have the social capital to hold the system accountable, and nobody's holding the system accountable. The ballots are supposed to go out for this election on March 7th. I didn't get a ballot from the first election until I called and threatened. Lots of people who have been removed from classrooms, or they know, they have an idea how they're going to vote, they do not give you even ballots. They haven't sent out publicity of alternative candidates.
Did you say 60% whites?
6% of LAUSD is white.
So the
whites' attitude is, why do we want to pay for a school system that we're no longer using? And what I'm saying is, I taught in France for 7 years. My best students were sub-Saharan African. They spoke the best French. They came from the strongest families. We have done everything we have can in this society to decimate African-American culture. We are 40 years after the Latino walkouts, and we have a system in terms of how we educate Latinos that was worse than it was 7 years ago. Now, if we raise our eyes up from Los Angeles, New York, 5 months ago, a scandal came out that they had been fixing the assessments for black and Latino students for the last 7 years. When they finally gave them a state proctored exam, they were actually doing worse than they were doing 7 years ago. This has nothing to do with education. This has to do with building buildings. This has to do with average daily attendance. There is no support for student discipline. You can't teach in a classroom where the administrator is going to come after you, or the administrator is going to tell the students you don't have to listen to what the teacher is saying. My students are good kids. They were entitled to a lot better. Some of my students, I have educated them at my own expense, and I wonder who they would have been if they had been given a good education in the beginning.
Yeah.
But if you educate Latinos, you lose your cheap labor source. And if you educate blacks, you got to look at 400 years of incredibly shitty history. And the society doesn't want to do it. So we hire Oreos and coconuts to run the system. And this has got to come to an end. What makes you Latino is if you care for Latino children. What makes you black is if you care for black children. And if you don't, I don't care about the pigment of your skin. And this is true with our union. The House of Representatives decides nothing and does nothing. It could be a vital organization. We need, first of all, to have a very clear platform.
Do you go to meetings at HOR?
I don't go anymore because it was a waste of time, and I don't need the chicken dinner. What needs to happen? As I told you, when they decide on something, it sits on Duffy's desk, just as it sat on Higuchi's desk. Nobody implements those motions. And to show you how teachers know just how corrupt it is, my figures are not 16.7% voted. My figure is 13.75%. This is apathy. This is teachers believing that you have LAUSD coming after you, or you have LAUSD light, which is not so light, UTLA. If Warren comes in and changes things and turns things around, teachers are dying to believe, and some cases, in the case of Rigoberto Ruelas, are literally dying to have things changed.
Well, let's talk about this during the week, and then I'll try to address some of it next weekend.
Okay? I appreciate it. You have a good week.
Thank you, Len.
Bye-bye.
That was Leonard Eisenberg from his blog, is perdaily. It's .org or com. And then that was Jordan Henry, founder and organizer for New TLA. And before that, it was Wes Farrow, who is with New TLA. And we've been listening to some of The Daily Show from March 3rd, which is about teachers. I thought it was great. And we're going to go out. We'll see you next weekend. This is Nick for Teacher Talk. And our theme song, Another Brick in the Wall.
We don't need no education. We don't need no thought control. Dark sarcasm in the classroom.